So we'll start with a quick discussion of the effect of band structure on the integer quantum Hall effect. So we're going to discuss quantum Hall effect in graphene in particular. And this shouldn't take us that much time. And then once we're done with it, we will start talking about fractional quantum Hall effect. But before we start, actually, let me ask you. So on Tuesday, you had a tutorial on the finding lambda levels in graphene. So how many of you finished that tutorial? Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. So then I will review that part very, very quickly. And the reason why I would review it is because your homework is going to be on finding quantum Hall edge states in graphene. So I will just set up some notations and so on, which you'll later see in the homework tomorrow. So what we're going to see in this discussion is that even though there are really a lot of similarities between quantum Hall effect in graphene and quantum Hall effect in the usual semiconductor with quadratic dispersion, there are also important differences. And those differences become most evident if you consider the following quantity. If you consider Hall conductivity per fermionic flavor. Okay, so let's imagine that we have a system where fermions have some intrinsic degree of freedom, so where they have, you know, spin, value like in graphene, and the total number of these flavors is n, nf. Okay, so when n orbital lambda levels are filled, as we established, the Hall conductivity is given by n e squared over h for each fermionic species. So to get the total Hall conductivity, we need to simply multiply it by the number of flavors, right? So this is filled n filled orbital lambda levels, and so the total filling factor, right? If you are to introduce filling factor, which is the density of electrons divided by the density of states within a single lambda level, which, as we established, is 1 over 2 pi L squared, right? So there is one state per flux quantum. So this is called filling factor. And clearly, right, if n equals to n naught, you're filling one lambda level. So this filling factor will be related to nf and n in a very simple manner. It's just the product of nf and n, right? So, and let me think about this conductivity. Let me measure it per one fermion flavor. So let me plot sigma xy divided by the fermionic flavor as a function of the filling factor divided by the number of flavors. Right? Then it's clear that for the usual non-relativistic electrons with parabolic dispersion, right, from our discussion, we know that each one contributes c squared over h. So if I am to plot this dependency, I will just get a staircase, right? So with the steps, with the plateaus at all integer filling factors. Right, so this is 1 squared over h, 2 squared over h, and so on. Now, once you consider materials with Dirac dispersion, like graphene, turns out this picture changes. So if you plot the same quantity, so if you plot the sigma xy divided by the number of fermionic flavors, turns out it will make a staircase which is shifted by 1/2. Right? So you will find that there is a plateau at 1/2. Then there is a plateau at 3/2, right, and so on. So the whole thing is shifted. So the blue line would be for Dirac materials, and the white line is for usual non-relativistic to the electron gas. Okay, so let's see how this comes about. This half integer quantum Hall effect. So first let's recall the spectrum of Landau levels. So we're going to do it quickly since you already derived it. Right, so remember that there are two sublattices in graphene lattice. A and B, so for example, this side could be A, right? And this side would be B, and I just have to repeat them periodically. And remember that when I'm thinking about the low energy excitations, they live near the corners of the Brillouin zone, where I have two Dirac points at corners k and k prime, and when we write down a general wave function of a low energy excitation, we can think about it as follows. So we can say that it's a product, right? So let me call amplitudes of the wave function on the a and b sublattices psi a and psi b, right? So I can represent it as a product of the zero energy Bloch wave function exactly at the k point, right? So there is a wave function psi k a, let me call it, psi k b. And I can multiply it by a slowly varying envelope function, which would depend on the coordinate. So let me call this one uk function of x, y. And vk is a function of xy. Okay? Right, so this is the low energy excitations living in the k near the k point, or as they also call it, in the k valley. And in principle, my wave function could involve a superposition of the excitations in the two valleys. So I need to write the same thing for the second valley. It would be psi k prime a, psi k b, psi k prime b, zero u k prime, right? So another envelope function in the k prime valley. And these guys are just the Bloch functions with the quasi-momentum k or k prime. So they're simply given by the CKA zero is simply an exponential of IK times the current position of the A atom. There is a simple graphical representation of this. If you think about the amplitudes of such a, you're interested, right? So far the chemical potential is not important because I'm simply finding the spectrum, right? But I am interested, indeed I am interested in the situation where energies lie near this neutrality point. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. You're right. Because if I now, this effectively means that I consider momenta which are not too far from the k and k prime points, right? But it's just for many purposes it's convenient to write it in the real space rather than in the momentum space as we did before. So and this Bloch wave functions have a very simple sort of graphic representation. If you were to plot how the Bloch function varies on the lattice, you'll see it simply has a threefold periodic pattern. So, for example, if I'm to plot psi k a zero, it looks like that. So it will be quite simple. So it's simply let me just draw the amplitudes on different a sides, right? So it goes as one. Not one. So this is tau squared, tau one, right? And then it repeats. So it's tau. So here you would have to put tau squared, where tau is a root of unity. So it's e to the 2 pi I over 3, right? So t tau to power 3 is 1, right? And this is the reason why this pattern repeats, right? So you see that to go from this side, to get amplitude on this side from this amplitude, you need to multiply it by tau. So you got tau a third, it's 1, right? Then again by tau, so tau, and so on. And you can, so you can right away see that this is indeed a zero energy wave function, because you know, if you are to think about the tight binding model, right? So if you need to find the amplitude on B side, right? So you know that these guys can all hop, right? You need to add effectively hopping matrix element times the amplitudes here, right? And you see they all add up to zero, right? So right away from the tight binding model, you see that this is the zero energy wave function, and you can easily define the other block wave functions like psi kb zero and psi k prime a zero and psi k prime b zero in a very similar manner. So it would be always a periodic threefold periodic pattern of this one tau and tau squared, right? So all right.